Since the time when Aboriginal tribes were roaming the earth, Montmorillonite clay has been ingested and used externally on the body for curative purposes. It was important then, and today, with mineral-depleted soils, I believe an even more vital role is being played out today. Clay is alive, and today's guest, Ray Kong, is here to share his over 27-year-long study regarding this special dirt. And come to think of it, my grandfather told me you have to eat a peck of dirt before you die. Well, I guess we're about to find out why. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Ray, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Eating clay is documented well back into ancient times, and I'm wondering if you could share a favorite story or use from back then.
Well, there are many stories because there are literally hundreds of cultures in ancient times have utilized the clays for ingestion, but not only for ingestion, but for healing wounds, sores, even bee stings, the same maladies and medical conditions that affect people today. And going back to ancient times, it has been said that it was observed by man, watching the animals rolling in the mud, if you will, and when they have sores and or wounds, they would always roll or take mud baths or simply self-medicate, if you will. And through those observations, it has been said that man tried it and followed and found that it works the same with people as it does with animals. So we have many documented stories of various animals, even today as we speak, where animals do utilize clay not only for self-medicating, but for enhancing the nutrient intake into the bodies. Because in nature, which is where this all started, take wild animals as an example. They don't have hospitals and doctors and clinics and the facilities we have as today as we, our medical system has.
Aren't they the lucky ones?
Yeah, so obviously they, when they're in distress and they have needs, the self-medication is paramount. Animals must be strong, must be alert, quick. Otherwise, they're eaten or they don't survive. So through observations of this type in ancient times, man also utilized clays. And Native American Indians, as an example, would dip their corn in clay prior to eating it. They would boil it like we do today, and many times they would put clay into the water, but they wouldn't dip it many times while eating the corn, anything to utilize clay. And the benefits they found from this is vast. Clay is such a simple element, but yet it's very complex in its mineralogy and in its science. And it's very, very misunderstood, but clay is one of the few elements on Earth, as an example, that detoxifies. It's very difficult to think of any other. There are a few elements that detoxify, as an example. So self-medicating through the use of rolling in clay, ingesting in clay, putting it on your skin. Even people put it in their hair, in their gums, in their teeth, to whiten their teeth, to tighten their gums. Or to relieve of themselves of like bee stings and various maladies associated with the skin, has been utilized for centuries. In fact, the Asians, we must remember that the United States were babies compared to other cultures in terms of time. How old is the United States? 250 years old, maybe? Even the Europeans been around 400 or 500 years. In Asia, 9,000-10,000 years. So the use of clays in other ancient cultures has been utilized for a long time. And there are very few things on Earth that survive the ultimate test, which is time, if it doesn't work. Obviously, things like Vioxx and many other so-called miracle drugs not only don't survive the test of time, but they cause a lot of harm, not to mention a lot of financial distress.
Yes, exactly.
Millions of dollars.
It's very interesting how we've done a few interviews over the years with people who have been able to really enhance the nutrient value and mineral content of plants depending on how they were grown. And, you know, the so-called animal double-blind test is they'll put a pile of corn in one place and then they'll put the other pile of corn that's really mineral-rich in another place, and the animals instinctively will eat all that corn and they won't even touch the other pile until there's absolutely none left.
Yeah, this is exactly why when man first observed animals ingesting clay and utilizing clay, that's how it started, so it's been said, because it does contain a lot of the nutrients that are lacking in food.
Yes.
As an example, if you take in the United States, the seven major corn-growing states, you know, Iowa and Illinois and Nebraska, et cetera, the U.S. Department of Agriculture claims that the seven major corn-growing states, which is the heartland of America, the soil is 80% deficient in copper. And this has been known since 1968. That's a few years ago. And in 1968, 1970, the American Medical Association said, so what? Now, science, as well as people know, that we will die without a trace of copper.
Right, and that's, I was trying to explain it yesterday to someone about the trace minerals, and it's exactly as you just said. Even though we don't need very much, we do need it. Like if you're making a cake, you only need a tiny bit of baking soda. You don't need as much of that as you do of the flour, but you're not going to get a good size and good tasting cake unless you add those minute ingredients.
Exactly. And when we think about, you know, the big picture as far as food, nutrients, all nutrients come from the earth, and that's the primary source of all the nutrients that we utilize to live. And in nature, there's a process called plant root nutrient uptake, where the plant root hairs reach out and grab onto these particles, these minerals, and then take it into the rice, the beans, the lettuce, the apples, the grain that we feed the chickens and the turkeys and the pigs and the cattle that we eat to live, but that's where it comes from. So of all the soils on Earth, the sweetest, highest in nutrient value soils have clay.
Yes, and I love thinking about clay as the alchemy of nature. And as you just mentioned, clay is living. So that's where I'd love for you to go right now with why is it considered living and how does it differentiate just from dirt, for instance?
Okay, well, clays are special dirt, if you will. Special in the terms of the elements on the periodic table. If you take any rock as an example, sedimentary rock like quartz any common rock that you find in your backyard or in the Rocky Mountains or wherever you live, those rocks are usually in the form probably formed by volcanic activity. But through weathering over the millions of years, these rocks decompose. And that's what we mean by living. If you were to take clay and put it in a vessel of some kind, a jar, and come back a million years later, that clay will be totally transformed because it is living, it is alive. In fact, if you take a spoonful of ordinary dirt from your backyard, wherever you live, and you put it under a microscope, it contains thousands, if not millions, of living organisms. Clay is alive. And to prove that clay is alive, as well as the high nutrient value, if you think of the animals that ingest clay for a living, such as shrimp, clams, even lobsters, obviously earthworms. They do pretty good by ingesting clay. Even bottom feeders like catfish and what have you, they eat mud for a living. It's very high, it's very nutritional, and it is alive because the organisms that are in the clay get into the body or the digestive tract of the animal that eats it and turns into the nutrients through enzymes and through the various processes of our digestive tract and enters through the blood tissue membrane into the bloodstream to nourish our various organs and cells throughout the body. But clay is in a state that is constantly transforming, but it's not a process that we can observe in our lifetime. It takes millions of years. Clay originally started from all these various rocks throughout the world, and that probably was preceded by some volcanic activity. It's all from the Earth's crust. Now, if you look at the Earth as a globe, if you will, the center of this globe is molten as we speak. The crust that we live on is about 100 miles thick. And in proportion, it's almost like a chicken egg with a volume of a liquid inside and a thin shell. The Earth is only about 7,000 or 8,000 miles in diameter. I don't know if you've ever looked at it, those terms. It's about 25,000 miles in circumference. And if the Earth's crust is only 100 miles thick compared to 7,000 or 8,000 miles in diameter, it's a very thin layer. Well, in this layer of crust, as we know as Earth or dirt, contains all these minerals. Now, through precipitation and volcanic activity and tectonic activity of the various plates throughout the world, when they crush, grind, roll, and move, usually through water or volcanic activity or hydro forces, these rocks that contain all these minerals turn into clay. In the United States, where our mine is, the Colorado River is the one, is the river that transports the minerals throughout the Rocky Mountains, south of Canada, through Bryce Canyon, Zion Canyon, Grand Canyon, and all the little tributaries that feed into the Colorado River bring these minerals from the Rocky Mountains. Now, these minerals typically are not economical to mine like gold or silver today. And many times they're 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 feet below the surface. Because of tectonic plate activity, the Pacific plate with the Pacific Ocean is on and the North American plate collided and formed the Rocky Mountains. Now, these minerals that are 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 feet or more under the surface of the ground are now exposed to the atmosphere, and precipitation brings these little minerals down in rock form down to the river we know today as the Colorado. And as these rocks, sometimes as large, they're boulders, sometimes as large as an automobile, they would roll and they would break and they would crush, they would grind, and the movement of the water would cause them to roll and slowly grind. And as it does this, thousands of miles down to what is the Colorado River used to free flow into the Sea of Cortez prior to man's intervention of all the dams. But in years of heavy rainfall, these boulders and these rocks would roll and crush and grind, and the river would always overflow its bank. Now, in Southern California, where our deposit is located, the river would always overflow its bank and go into a depression that is below sea level. Our mine is about 100 feet below sea level, and the Salton Sea, which is the largest body of water in California, is about 150 feet below sea level. Gravity would draw this water away, and geologists call this activity a quiet water deposit. It's actually an overbank quiet water deposit. Now, as these rocks roll and crush and grind, these various minerals that we call trace minerals, some of them are macro, some of them are micro, some of them are trace, but all these elements is what makes clay. But as the river would grind like the action of the ocean and the beach causing rock to turn into sand and ultimately be finer and finer. But as this takes place, these minerals would mix or chelate and then ultimately bond with each other electrically. So that's how clay is made, and that's what separates it from ordinary earth or dirt.
Well, you just segued beautifully into my next round of questioning regarding the negative and positive charge to this living clay and how that works within or on the body.
Okay, well, first of all, not all dirt has a powerful negative charge or is electrically charged or is when it's called an open ionic state.
Right,
but because
so
because the clay that is now drawn to a large, dry, flat area in the Southern California desert, it is not exposed to the sun for millions of years. And this sun action plus the activity of the hydrothermal forces of the earth. See, the Colorado River happens to be in an area that's along the San Andreas Fault, one of the largest earthquake fault lines in North America. 85% of the hydrothermal activity in the United States takes place in Yellowstone National Park. The remainder, the 15%, the bulk of that is in California. In ancient times, Baja California was connected to mainland Mexico, but during the tumultuous earthquake activity, Baja California split away from mainland Mexico, and at that point, the San Andreas Fault started, and it goes right up through California, central California, then out into the ocean below San Francisco. I don't know if you remember Superman, but they were talking about when that portion of the earth would fall away, there would be beachfront property. Remember that? Anyway, along that fault, the gases that are released from the heat of the earth, this molten core that I spoke about, heats the water, and in the case where our clay is, up to 850 degrees, thousands of feet below the surface. And these gases would come up and chelate further, boil, if you will, this mud.
Right.
In fact, the Native American Indians used to call it bubbling mud. So that would mix it and chelate it and give it another electrical charge just from the heat, the energy of the earth, and the solar radiation exposed to the atmosphere for, you know, millions of years.
Right.
Gives it a powerful negative charge.
And we may mention, and I think just it would be enough to mention, because there are certainly other things I want to talk about with the clay and its properties, that not all clays are necessarily the best to take internally or even externally. And it's the Montmorillonites that seem to be the best for ingestion through time and through science. It's been sort of proven.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason for that, there are three primary reasons why calcium montmorillonite is known to be the highest, purest, most highest in nutrition as far as the various clays throughout the world. There are basically seven. There's more, but there's basically seven groups of clay, and there are many uses of clay. Most of the clays throughout the world are used for industry. They're industrial clays, and like cat litter, that's a sodium bentonite. Clays are used for making grease and shoe polish, lipstick, dynamite. It's used for oil well drilling mud. It's used to coat paper. There's many, plaster and wallboards of our homes. There's many uses of these industrial clays. Now, the differences between industrial clays and edible clays, like calcium montmorillonite, are three things. The clays that are edible, are considered edible, and you know, basically detoxify and is absorbed into your bloodstream, have three primary differences in any clay. Number one, it has to have the right mix of particles on the basic elemental scale of particles. It has to have the right amount of calcium ratio to magnesium, to tin, to zinc, to iron. All these elements must be in the right ratio. Again, like I said earlier, or you said about baking a cake, it has to have the right ingredients, the right proper ratios in order for that to work. So the basic elements is very important, number one. Number two, it has to be the correct particle size, because we can eat any clay. Most of them will not, you know, really harm you. They're not, some of them are not good for you, but they won't harm you. But if they're not fine enough, they will not transfer through the blood tissue membrane in our just digestive tract. And the third thing is the powerful negative charge of certain clays detoxify through a process in nature called opposite polarity attraction. In nature, opposites attract, like hot to cold, night to day, plus to minus, male to female, etc. So most toxins and bacteriums in nature, many pathogens, are positively charged. When ingesting clay, the negative clay bonds to the positively charged toxins and bacterium, and it does several things. It usually surrounds that bacterium. In an example of bacteria, it will surround it with clay platelets, because the clay platelets are smaller than bacteria. And when it surrounds it through this opposite polarity attraction, it then separates that bacteria from its food source, and it simply starves it to death. But in water, clay has been used for many, many years as a detoxifier and cleans water through a process called flocculation, which is this opposite polarity attraction. And in the case of water, the clay will simply bond to the impurities and the bacterium in the water, and then coat that bacterium, and as a result, it makes it larger, and it makes it filterable, and it makes it heavier. In the case of lakes and ponds, when a river that feeds into a lake, like in California, Lake Tahoe, the river that feeds into Lake Tahoe passes over a clay bed, and this clay has a negative charge. As these negative charged clay platelets enter the lake, it grabs onto positively charged particles that usually make water murky, and it will bond to it, and it will simply get heavier as a result of getting larger, and it will sink to the bottom of the lake, and over time, it decomposes, like leaves in the forest will decompose and turn into nitrogen. This is the cycle of life in a lake. So this is how it cleanses, through opposite polarity attraction. So the three things that are important is the correct mix of elements on the periodic table, the correct size, so that when ingested, it will pass through the blood tissue membrane to nourish our various organs and cells. And number three, it has to have a powerful negative charge to detoxify. That's what makes edible clays edible,
right,
and beneficial.
And in speaking about the lake, it's interesting, all the research that, of course, people are very invested in their koi, in this type of fish that people have in their ponds. And the ones that breed the koi know that they need a mineral-rich, muddy type of pond in order to get the most beautiful fish and healthiest.
Yes, exactly. Well, the Asian, the Chinese, Japanese, Korean, have raised ornamental fish, koi, for centuries. And in fact, today there are several products that are for this market, of which we make one of them, called TerraPond. But what the Asians have found out is koi fish are a carp, and carp are bottom feeders, and they ingest mud and clay for a living. So when we take these fish, these beautiful fish, and take them away from their natural environment, which is a mud pond, if you will, or a river that's slow moving with roily water and mud, when they take fish out of that environment and they put them into a cement lined pond or a rubber lined pond like we have here in America, they lose their luster, they lose their health, they lose their beauty, and many times they become very susceptible. They lose their immune system simply because we take them out of their normal environment and we change their diet, you know, from mud to fish food.
Right.
And that process does cause them to lose their beauty, because in nature, the state of your health is exemplified, you know, the more beautiful a butterfly, a flower, or a fish, or a person is, usually the healthier they are. So they go hand in glove.
Right.
And to keep them beautiful, you must keep them healthy.
And Ray, I'm sorry, what is, I think it would be helpful if you could describe the properties of adsorption and absorption.
Okay, well, this is going into that negative charge of the clay. Clay platelets, number one, are measured in microns and angstroms. It's a simple unit of measurement, like a foot or a yard or a meter. A micron is 1 millionth of a meter, and an angstrom is close to 1 billionth of a meter. Now, this is how we have to measure the clay particles, the size of them. And the shape of them is one of the things in nature that has the highest surface area, what is called a high aspect ratio, like an airplane wing or like a playing card or a piece of paper. There's a large flat surface, very thin edge. This large flat surface is the area of the clay platelet that carries a negative charge and has the largest surface area. In fact, it is the highest shape of surface area in nature. The opposite is a globe. So this negative charge of the clay platelet is what attracts these toxins, and absorb is where, through the negative charge, particles will cling to it on this outside, or this, the surface of the clay platelet, flat surface, the top to bottom, if you will, not the edges. However, the inside is like a sponge. There's like a lattice where the particles are drawn into inside between these two layers, like a sandwich, through the internal structure of the clay. So in drawing it into the internal structure of clay, it's called absorb. And when it clings to the outer surface, some people think it's magnetic, but it's not magnetic. It is opposite polarity attraction. And the particles that cling to the outside is adsorb. So the two together combine makes these little clay platelets like sponges, if you will. And the process of adsorption and absorption are basically on the surface, internal structure
right.
of the clay.
Right.
So these two forms or places that clay itself absorbs and adsorbs is a tremendous large surface area for the size of this clay platelet. And in terms of the average size of montmorillonite, our clay is less than 20 microns in size. Some of it's down to 2, some of it is submicron. But to give you a relative term or relative size, a human hair is about 75 microns in diameter. Clay platelets get down to 1, 2, 3 microns. You cannot see it with the naked eye.
Right.
In fact, they're smaller than a germ.
As I'm sure you all know, I love all of this great common sense healthcare information. We'll have more with Ray Kong next week. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for podcasting on iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.